This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, brought to you by Athletic Greens. It is Thursday, June 27th, 2024. Edward Vento and I are coming to you just minutes after full time from Atlanta, United States 1, Panama 2. A Tim Weah red card, and then 83rd minute by Fajario sees the Lynx lose to Panama, and on all likelihood have an uphill battle on Monday against Uruguay, and very well could need to win that game in order to get out of the group. First, joining me now, Ed. How are you? How excited are you for this group therapy session?
I was feeling good coming into this game. Now I am feeling much worse and very much in need of some therapy. Just kind of a gut punch of a game. I'm sure we'll get into all the details, but yeah, not at all what we were going for.
Yeah, so I'll run down chronologically, so that we can just jump on things. And Ed, I feel like when U.S. games like have a nice narrative or flow to them, then we can be really organized in how we cover them. And I feel like when it's just total CONCACAF madness, then if the game does not have a plot, it's impossible for us to recap it as if it did, because it did not. So in any case, U.S. score 5 minutes in off of a set piece, Tim Reams setting up Weston McKennie, but that was rightfully called off from VAR for being offside. And then in the 17th minute, off the ball situation where Tim Weah and a Panamanian defender are jostling, and Tim Weah doesn't particularly care for the way that he's being handled and appears to try and shove going upwards towards the shoulder, ends up catching the back of the head of the Panamanian defender. Did he sell it a little bit? Maybe. Have we clearly legislated within FIFA that you do not touch someone above the head? I guess unless you're a Mexican player wanting to choke out Weston McKennie, that is a straight red card. So that happened in the 18th minute after VAR got involved. The U.S. goes ahead from a fantastic finish by Florian Balogun. He and Christian Pulisic continue to be fantastic from an attacking standpoint. Cesar Blackman scores 4 minutes later to make it 1-1 at halftime. I should say there's a sequence in there where there was a ball into the box and USMNT goalkeeper Matt Turner goes up for a ball, gets a collision while he's in the air from a Panamanian player, and he has to be subbed out at halftime for Ethan Horvath. U.S. is battling back and forth. They're in a defensive posture. They're trying to do stuff in transition. A penalty is called for Panama when Jose Ferrario, the scorer of the eventual game winner, goes down on a challenge by Cameron Carter-Vickers. I'm not sure, Ed, that there was actual contact. I think that was straight up a dive after the ball was gone. We'll come on to that. And then after that, it was the 83rd minute. Ferrario ends up scoring on a broken play in the box. Red card to Coco Carrasquilla for trying to sweep the leg on Pulisic after he was gone. But credit to Panama. They CONCACAF'd their way after the 83rd minute to a win. Ed, that's everything that happened. I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, it was very much a CONCACAF special. So for any non-CONCACAF fans watching that game, they really did get the full CONCACAF experience tonight. Red cards, yellow cards not given, penalties, you know, penalty shouts on both sides. You know, late goals, just pure CONCACAF madness throughout the whole game. you know, CONCACAF giveth and CONCACAF taketh away. And tonight was kind of mostly taketh away. That referee, I don't know. His name is like Ivan something. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But I know that he has officiated a lot
Ivan
of US
Barcone,
matches.
He is yes. Honduran for What It Matters.
He has refereed a lot of US matches lately. I believe he was the referee of the Serginho Dest red card game, which the Tim Weah red card kind of gave off a lot of those vibes. So there, you know, a lot of people on social media are blaming him because he has a history of giving out a lot of yellow cards, giving out a lot of red cards. But to me, it is not on the referee, and I don't want to steal all the time, so I know we'll get to it. But yeah, just an insane game.
Yeah. So let's talk about the officiating, Ed. So I'll go through the various potential controversies and major decisions that the entire officiating crew, not just Bartone, had to make. I'll render my opinion, and feel free to interrupt me if you think I'm not based or if you think I'm completely off. First of all, VAR gets it right. I don't think there's any question that the goal by Weston McKennie in the fifth minute is offside. I am very anti, like, hands to the face or anything. So for me, it's unquestionable. A red card on Tim Weah and a straight red for me. And to the question about Bartone and maybe a history of giving red cards to U.S. players, I mean, do we suddenly not think that Serginho Dest's, you know, actions, you know, in Nations League lead up was not a red card as well? So I don't have a complaint about any of the three red cards that we're talking about between Serginho Dest before this game, and then the two to Tim Weah, and then who was the Coco Kadeskia, who was given the red card for Panama. No question for me that the penalty was not a penalty, and no question for me that the three goals that were ultimately scored were valid goals. So I think there is something to be said for, and then maybe the only other controversial one. So let's talk about it now, Ed. I can't remember which half it was in because my brain is scrambled at this point, but, Christian Pulisic going for the ball and then getting contact in the air, in transition. I feel like that one was 50-50. I tend to be the apologist or kind of the officials and giving them the benefit of the doubt. I can understand why USF fans, seeing how the rest of the game was officiated and the ticky-tack fouls, I thought a lot more, you know, there could have been at least another yellow or two for persistent infringement on Balogun. If there's anyone that I have a question about, it's that one. I think it was way more a penalty than the Panama one that got VAR'd off.
Yeah, I think that would have been a little soft. And I am, you know, I am kind of a homer amongst people who know me, but I can't even try to, I think that would have been a soft penalty. The one that I do think the referee just jarringly got wrong was not even giving a card for what happened to Matt Turner. Like that to me was egregious. Like I understand that the goalie coming out, he kind of sets himself up to get contact, but to me, that was a clear as day yellow card. And for that player, I don't know who the Panamanian player was, but for him to not even be given a yellow card to me was just a horrible, horrible miss there.
I believe it was Guerrero who happened to get a yellow card in the 45th minute as well. And I don't remember the play upon which, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, he would have gotten a second yellow card, or if he'd not gotten a yellow card at the end of the first half, that would have changed the game. But no, I'll agree with you. I think the Pulisic penalty, I think, was a more valid one than the Panamanian shout. I think both of them would have been relatively soft. But yeah, if there's any one where a penalty or reversing or giving a goal or giving a card was gotten wrong by the officiating tonight, I think it was absolutely, there should have been a yellow for what happened to Matt Turner. Continue, Ed. What else did you have to say?
Not much else on the officiating. You know, you could kind of tell that this game was going to be a little out of hand. And I do think the ref did lose the grip on the game. And, and then in the second half, cards were just being given out left and right all of a sudden. You know, Panama players were putting in challenges like that early on in the game, not getting carded, but the same way around. You know, it was a physical game and the referee set a precedent, but then with that Matt Turner play was really where he set, you know, we're going to allow you to go flying at the goalie and not get a yellow card. So I don't think the officiating is the reason that the United States lost this game. Was it a factor? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to lose sleep over the way the game was officiated.
Yeah. So if there's anything I'm going to lose sleep on, Ed, and, you know, let's come to it. I thought we were constructive, but harsh on Sergiño Dest when he got his red card for qualification to the Nations League knockouts. This is probably the worst moment of Tim Weah's USMNT career. I can't think of anything worse. I feel like if he had gotten a prior red card that, you know, the broadcast would have brought it up or I would know about it. You can't lose that. And I know, Ed, you and I have conversations oft. I am an MLS person. I live in an MLS city. I cover an MLS team for another outlet other than Last Word on Sports. And I know, Ed, of the people who are, to the extent that you are a Euro snob, I think you're fairly based in your takes on where MLS is as a league and where Americans playing in MLS can be useful and in what ways they are useful to the U.S. men's national team. And so if there's one complaint that I have about the mostly European-based players or the dual nationals who hadn't had prior time in MLS or extensive experience prior to that playing in CONCACAF, I do think there is value in understanding the CONCACAF-iness that they do not necessarily experience when we play friendlies against European teams, against teams from around the country, and like nothing that we would ever really see in a World Cup, really. And so I thought that's something to where I thought if Greg was going to really tinker with this roster, I thought he would have gone more experienced, not in that experience in terms of players who had experience against the Panamas, the Costa Ricas, the Hondurases. I don't know if we've played Guatemala recently. And so if I were to put players into buckets of ones who have less of that experience or who I think are less, you know, bled through that system as well, I would put Tim Weah more towards that category. You know, Jedi Robinson played what, almost every single minute of qualification, so I would put him in that category. Joe Scally has stepped in and been valiant for Sergiño Dest against Mexico, so he has that experience as well. So, you know, Tim Weah and then maybe Florian Balogun, just because all that he's really experienced with that is Mexico, and he's been measured in terms of his reactions to that. But yeah, I think if there's Tim Weah isn't the reason the U.S. lost the game because it was so early and there was still so much more that could be done, but the U.S. was playing behind the eight ball. And if there was any team that was going to be a threat to knock out the U.S. in this competition in the group stage, it was going to be Panama. And so it's just in those little moments, like you can't do something, not even that is out of your frustration or even if it's valid. I haven't seen a close of enough replay. Like, did he get stomped on his foot? I feel like VAR would have seen that given what else VAR was able to catch in this game. But you can't afford to lose your head. And so Sergiño Dest cost the U.S. against Trinidad and Tobago, albeit in a game they were already advancing. But my complaint about that for Sergiño was you can't afford to lose your head, but also this is beneath you because of the opponent we're playing and because of where you were. You get a red card in that situation and we lose this game. Like, we're in a really, really terrible situation. This is Pablo Mascherini red card in 2006 against Italy, if I'm not mistaken. You know, this is this is missed penalty situation in a knockout game as well. Like, this was absolutely terrible. To what extent Sergiño Dest had to apologize in the locker room after that game in Trinidad and Tobago, and to the extent that Greg Berhalter, who likes to keep most of the punishments and other stuff in-house and everything, whatever Dest had to do to get back into the good graces with the rest of the national team, I can't imagine what Tim Weah is going to be told and what is he's going to be thinking as he tries to find a way to get to sleep tonight as well. And so the U.S. didn't lose because of Tim Weah, because, you know, if there's a penalty there, or, you know, heck, if Pepe finishes that chance that he has that would have made it 2-1, are we talking about a different situation? Chris Richards right at the death as well could have made it 2-2 as well. The U.S. had chances in this game. It speaks to the it speaks to the quality of the effort and the, you know, cojones of the other 10 players on the field. But, you know, have you seen Hoosiers by chance, Ed?
It's been a while. I have, okay. But so it's been a long time.
In one of their first games, it might be their first game of the season, Gene Hackman is trying to tell the players, he's making a big deal about passing, like you have to work as a team together. And there's one player on the team, I can't remember which, it's not the main one who finishes the shot at the end to win the state title. But so one of the players is not doing that, and he's just choosing to score, either because he doesn't believe in the system that they're going through, or he doesn't trust his teammates. And then so they're rotating the squad later on in the final quarter, and then one of their players ends up fouling out, and so they're down to four players, and then so they're about to sub him in, and so the player who wasn't following the coach's directions and everything, Gene Hackman, the coach, says, my team's on the field. He voluntarily said, we're going to play down a man because applying my principles and then applying a standard and a punishment to that was more important than playing with five players to try and win the game. And so he comes in the locker room afterwards and he says, to those of you who were on the field at the end of the game, I'm incredibly proud of you. To the rest of you, you have work to do before the next game, implying the player who fouled out and then the player who chose to disobey the coach's directions as well. So if I was Greg Berhalter, not that I am, and I like to think that I'm at least somewhat more charismatic than he is, like, I think there's a valid argument to walk into that locker room and say, to the 10 players who were on the field at the end of the game, I'm proud of you. To those of you I had to sub off for injury or because you ran so hard you could not finish the game, I'm proud of you. And I would walk out of the room after that. I guess maybe you do some rah-rah stuff to try and galvanize the group for Uruguay or everything. But, you know, like, fairly or unfairly, like, there was so much stuff for the team to do. But at the same time, that was an inexcusable error by Tim Weah and just something that was so wasteful that he should know better. And so I can't not emphasize that if there's anybody that I'm mad at right now, it's him. And if there's, you know, I would almost say, Ed, I feel like if you asked us a week ago, if the U.S. doesn't get out of the group, like, should Greg Berhalter be fired? But I almost think at this point now, Ed, like, he's got a free pass. Somewhere in Greg Berhalter's brain is he thinking, unless we go out and lose 6-0 and get another guy sent off for Uruguay and everything, I can point to the Federation and say, Tim Weah made a dumb mistake. I don't coach that. My players don't do that. I discipline that when that happens within the team. Serginho Dest with the red card, Weston McKennie with the issue that happened in Nashville during World Cup qualification as well. Like, this is not on me. And, like, I'm almost thinking I have a free pass to coaching the team in 2026 when, you know, there were pitchforks and torches and tar and feathers out after Brazil. Ed, I've been talking for a lot. You say something smart.
Look, I totally understand where you're coming from. Greg Berhalter did not get this red card tonight. Greg Berhalter did not tell Tim Weah to get a red card tonight. I am very critical of Greg Berhalter. I think people who follow me and you know that. I do not think he's the right man for the job. I did not think he should have been rehired in, what was it, 2022? Yeah, 2023, I guess, after the World Cup. I hear you. I do agree that Tim Weah, red card, that's, you know, not on Greg. But I just can't ignore the fact that you sat back and tried to bunker for 78 minutes against a subpar Panama team that you probably could have gone after and scored a goal, especially at home. The crowd was behind you. You scored a goal literally 10 minutes after the red card. Like, that should have shown Greg that we don't need to sit back and we don't need to bunker down. Sure, being down a man creates a lot more problems and makes things a lot more difficult. And it's not as easy as just play open and direct and whatever. But this is Panama at home we're talking about. If this was Uruguay or Brazil or Argentina, that's a completely different story. I have faith that our talent on the field in that game could have played a little bit more open, played a little bit more of a, we can still get something from this game. We can still get a win from this game if we can find a way to pull a rabbit out of our hat and score a goal and win. We're automatically through. Like, I can't believe that the mentality was to sit back and defend for 78 minutes. That was never going to work. If you spend the whole game trying to stop Panama from scoring a goal, the players are going to get tired. It had been coming. And that little, not scrum, but flurry of chances that Panama had towards right when they scored their goal, mm-hmm. I just had a feeling. It just had that feeling of, this is the moment. If Panama's going to win, it's going to happen right now. And sure enough, it happened right now. But to summarize all this and to tie a bow on it, if you can't get out of a group that contains Panama and Bolivia, you do not deserve to be the head coach of this team. And I do not think, I think that this would be, if that happens and they keep him and they try to convince us that he's the man for the job, this USSF is so far beyond saving, and they might already be. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm holding on to some light that's not there. But
it's not there, Ed.
you absolutely cannot keep a manager who A, does not have a signature win, even at home or away from home, and B, could not get out of a group that contained Bolivia and Panama. And if we beat Uruguay, that is a signature win, and that is a step in the right direction, and that could be just what we need to vault us to maybe making a semifinal, because Brazil have looked dreadful. I mean, my goodness, but I just don't understand how anyone could try to defend him if he can't get out of this group. Like, everyone's immediate reaction when the group was announced was, oh, Panama and Bolivia, like, not saying it's a guarantee, but like, the group stage should be easy to get through. We should come second. Like, losing to Uruguay is nothing to be ashamed of. But
two wins,
I
then
mean,
a loss. On, you know,
yeah, two
straight
wins,
chalk.
Then a loss. Maybe find a way to work a tie. But, you know, now it's just, it's like you tweeted out. It's up a creek without a paddle. And they have to go at Uruguay now. They cannot play the way they played against Brazil, which was, you know, try to congest the midfield and play a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? Reserved. They mm-hmm. have to go at Uruguay because they have to win.
So a couple things there, Ed. Like, to be clear, listeners, I, for those of you who haven't been listening to us for years, like, I wasn't defending Greg Berhalter in this situation. I was simply saying that the way a red card and that putting them behind the eight ball to not get out of the group is his get out of jail free card. Whether or not it will be,
no, absolutely,
I don't know.
Absolutely.
It's Matt Croker's situation. Ed and I have been on the record about how we felt about Greg going into the World Cup and after the World Cup. He wanted Jesse March. I wanted Patrick Vieira. Given the way that Canada's playing, in any case. So Ed, let's talk about the tactical approach with that. I suppose I'm not sure for me that there would have been an obvious. Because it was an attacker who got sent off, we've seen where if it's a defender who gets a straight red card, it makes sense to sub out an attacker for a defender in order to maintain whatever defensive structure. So I agree. Let's just list off the substitutions in the time in which they happen, because, you know, listeners, not that the Bolivia game matters at this point, but, you know, there was the one sub at halftime because Tyler Adams came off for Yunus Musa, and that was understandable. But then there weren't any other subs until the 65th minute. So there were no subs in the first half. At halftime, you had Ethan Horvath on for Matt Turner, presumably for that injury. Ed, has anybody tweeted out? Do we have an update? Has somebody asked Greg about that? Go ahead and look that up. I'll keep
answering. I heard lower leg when it happened, like when the sub was announced. Let me look. Let me see what I can find.
And then also at halftime, Cameron Carter-Vickers came in for Gio Reyna. Let's put a pin in that one for me, Ed. And then it was also at halftime, there was a third halftime sub, Johnny Cardoso came in for Tyler Adams, very similar to the first half. That was the Adams coming off for fitness, and Matt Turner, once we knew he was injured, were the two unsurprising subs. And then we did not see another substitution from the Yanks until the 72nd minute. Pepe comes in for Balogun. I have no complaints with that one. Balogun was running his nuts off, and you just needed some fresh legs. Pepe was the like-for-like substitution in there. Then you get the Panamanian goal in the 83rd, upon which the next sub that you get is Josh Sargent on for Tim Ream. I agree with that one, personally, Ed, just to get another attacking player on there. But so let's come on to the CCV one, Ed, because if I did have a complaint for how Greg approached, I don't mind having a defensive posture against Panama or letting them have the ball to then try and hit them on the counter, because we saw Pulisic, Balogun were able to do a lot of really, really good stuff with that. They were able to create opportunities. You know, Pulisic had that one, I think that, you know, curler to the back post. Somebody else was trying to find him as well. Like, they were creating chances between the first Panamanian goal and then I would say like the 60th minute. I would say the U.S. was the more dangerous team, albeit fewer, more dangerous opportunities than chances in volume that weren't going anywhere. The U.S. defensive structure was working in that regard. But I don't know how, when you're going for that transition play in the second half, you take off Gio Reyna and go with another center back to bring five at the back. The only thing that I can think of that would really allow that is then you give more license for Joe Scally and in particularly Jedi Robinson to go forward and be another one of those transition guys. But if I were to really do that, if you wanted to go five it back in the first half, Ed, I almost would have dropped McKennie back in because we've seen him not regularly, but he's been in a center back-ish role for Juventus at times. I know he played that for Schalke during Project Restart or whatever German word they had for that during the COVID interrupted season. Like, that's a role that he's semi-comfortable in and one that he would have, I think, done a good job in and been conservative around and been physical. That then leaves more space for Tim Ream to go out and try and spray a ball as well. What I did not like in the first half tactically, even before the first Panamanian goal, was the almost going six at the back. And it was a 4-4-1. And then at times it almost turned into a 5-3-1. Like, there were points where Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna looked like wingbacks in a back six, which, to your point, I thought was far too conservative. If you're going to drop somebody back, it's Weston McKennie. I don't think Gio Reyna is an outside back, and you want them further upfield as well. And so that's where, for me, Ed, you know, like, the we saw Balogun and Pulisic were able to cook despite being down a man. We know that Gio Reyna can do that. Gio Reyna's done that, pulling stuff out of his, you know, out of nowhere, doing that in transition. So I would not have, unless there's an injury that we don't know about or there was some fitness thing. I thought Gio was great against Bolivia in the minutes that he had. He played more than 45 minutes, you know, against that. I wouldn't have brought Gio Reyna off. I thought that was the mistake, even with removing the thought of CCV almost gave up a penalty that would have gifted the game to Panama. So I don't like the general concept of let's be deferential or let's be the team that doesn't have possession against Panama, but you can hunt them in pressing and you can hunt them in transition. And I think the defensive shape and where players were in the first half, even before the first Panamanian goal, did not set them up to be successful. And you effectively wasted 45 minutes of Gio Reyna in that position. And we don't need to go down the narratives of that position and what that might be implying or not implying with that. Ed, what did you make of the substitutes? Anybody stand out for you? I mean, nice to see Sargent, but hard for him to do anything in 4 minutes plus what? 4 minutes of stoppage time?
Yeah, just to close the book on Matt Turner, I haven't seen anything yet. Did not see anything yet. I don't know if the press conference has started yet or what, but nothing on that yet. One thing I forgot to mention in the officiating, 4 minutes of stoppage time. I mean,
oh my God. Yes. Thank you.
You could make a case we should still be playing right now. Like, there was a lengthy VAR check. There was a red card scrum. There were a ton of substitutes. There were a ton of stoppages plays for free kicks. 4 minutes. I was thinking like 8 at a minimum.
Yeah.
But that's just another officiating discrepancy there. Yeah. Yeah, as far as the substitutes go, I agree. I think taking Gio off was a bad call, especially if you are going to play defensively and try to hit on the counter. You need someone like him who can spray a ball to Balogun or Christian, you know, taking him off like was a weird.
I mean, it's not like Gio, I could look up his FIFA or his FOTMOB or his Football Manager stats right now. I'd like, he's not a high work rate defensive player. He's not Brendan Aaronson, but like he's not a defensive liability in that position. And if you were going to bring him off for someone for like to be that defensive structure, but then still provide something in the attack, like, Bert, I can't think of another player, Ed, in this squad right now I would want on the field, down a man trying to preserve a draw than Brendan Aaronson. And the fact that he doesn't get in the lineup as well, I think there were some subs that I liked from Greg. The general philosophy of here's how we want to go about it, the way he executed it and some of the personnel that he brought in and the timing of it, I disagreed. And, you know, I thought he was too he was conservative in a way. I feel like it was obvious from halftime, Ed, he was playing for the game to be 1-1. And when there's still 45 minutes mm-hmm. to play and everything mm-hmm. like that wasn't good enough for me. And there's points where I've given Greg the benefit of the doubt, or, you know, there's some tactical nuance where even if I disagree with his approach, I can see the logic behind it. I don't see the logic behind bringing Gio off for CCV at halftime. Do we really want to break down the goal here, Ed? I don't feel like doing a blame pie of which center back was at fault is super instructive, nor their fault, really. They were already put in a bad situation. Do we want to touch on Bolivia for the sake of completeness and then talk about Monday?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I was there at the game. It was a fun game. It should have been 4-5-0. if not for Ricardo Pepi. But, you know, I was surprised and impressed with the crowd, and it sounds like the crowd tonight was pretty impressive as well. Pro USA crowds, which is good to hear that the fans are coming out to support. But yeah, it's kind of hard to go back and be excited about a win after today, but you know, a good win. At times it felt like they should have been a lot better, and could have been a lot better, but you know, at the end of the day, a win is a win, and those 3 points are proving to be very, very important.
Yeah, no. I thought it was a good prequel to what we saw from an attacking standpoint from Balogun and Pulisic scoring the goals. Also, Ed, did we get a new set piece coach? Because, you know, Pulisic creating the corner against Brazil and then him scoring the direct free kick and everything. Like, so we're cooking in on set pieces finally, which is a good thing to see.
We did get a new set piece coach, and he's a former Tottenham set piece coach, which kind of has me
interesting.
Porn, because when he was our set piece coach, we were actually good on set pieces, and now we can't seem to defend or score a set piece for our life, but it's making the US a lot better. I think his name is Gianni Vio or something. He's an Italian set piece coach. It's something like that.
Okay, so that's good. And I don't know, maybe he speaks, maybe if he's Italian, he was watching enough Juventus to where he knows what Weston McKennie could do, because that wasn't, I don't think that's how they drew it up on the goal that got called off, you know, in the first 10 minutes of the game, but it was a well-taken set piece. And how about Tim Ream with almost an assist from an offside position? So other things that I'll just say quickly on the Bolivia game, Ed, you know, good to see Balogun and Pulisic, if nothing else, are going to be able to do really good stuff individually and combining with each other, even with Gio Reyna's not on the field. And to your point, there were some missed chances. And I think, you know, in hindsight, this could be really terrible from, you know, if we look at the U.S. trying to advance on goal difference on after Monday's fixtures. But the, you know, at the time, I thought like the most important thing was the result. They got the result. They looked really like the better team. Once they got the first goal, like, well, once they got the second goal, Bolivia never looked like they were coming back in the game in the second half. But, you know, Ricardo Pepi could have had another one. Christian Pulisic, Balogun, I think if they were being critical of themselves as elite athletes, probably would have said they would have wanted to get another goal. And I can't remember who else had a really good opportunity in this game. But so those are really my only complaints about that. Ed, how was the atmosphere with all the free tickets that FC Dallas and US Soccer were handing out, given the I saw a really good post from somebody, I don't remember which social media account, I don't remember which social media platform, but they argued, put all the Copa America games in the really huge college football stadiums and make the tickets like $20 to $40. And so like the, you know, I'm not going to ask you what you paid for it, but you know, I saw some people, like there were lower bowl tickets that were, you know, $150, $200. And I looked this up out of comparison. Ed, you want to guess, the starting price for all of the group stage games in the Euros in Germany. What's the starting price for all of them?
I'm going to convert this to dollars because okay. I don't really understand.
It's
really
roughly
know.
1-to-1. Roughly 1-to-1.
Okay. Okay. I don't know the conversion rate. I'll say $60.
$60. Okay. So if I were to do $60, I know it in Euros because the chart was in Euros. So $60 okay. USD is 56. Is $56.05 euros. It's starting at $40. I think the final is starting at 95 euros. So Ed, let's do 95 euros to dollars is $101. So I think there were second level seats at Jerry World on Saturday for USA Bolivia that were more expensive than the cheapest ticket for you to get into the European final. Like, this speaks to where we're at, a federation, CONMEBOL's decision to play it here because they wanted to make as much money as possible. And so that's just really disappointing. And to see these, you know, the atmosphere has been good. Ed, the South American fans bring their own flair. Jerry World's not a stadium I would move away from given the capacity and everything. Atlanta has a really nice stadium, but like, you're telling me if like Costa Rica, Brazil was at the Big House and they didn't charge a ticket more than $80, and if you were in the upper third of the Big House, given how far away you are from the pitch, you're only playing $20. Like, how insane and fun would that have been? So, yeah, CONMEBOL is making money, albeit it's going to be without, you know, the U.S. getting out of the group at this point. So, womp womp. Okay. I think we said everything we want to say about the Bolivia game. Oh, I guess for those keeping track, Ed, the only yellow card for the U.S. was to Weston McKennie, who, if I'm not mistaken, was not carded at any point in the various scuffles tonight. So there's no yellow card accumulation here going into Monday against Uruguay. But if the U.S. somehow survives that, Ed, like we could be, there could be some shorthanded players going into Brazil, Colombia. I'd have to look to see where those are at. So Ed, let's come on to the final games that we have for this group. So this is the final games will both be on Monday, and they'll be going on simultaneous, listeners. So Bolivia will be taking on Panama. This will be at 9 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Mountain. And so Panama, Bolivia will be in Orlando at Inter and Co Stadium. I think that's the new name of Orlando City Stadium, unless they renamed the Citrus Bowl. And then on FS1, also at 9 p.m. from Arrowhead in Kansas City, the United States will be taking on Uruguay. We're recording before Bolivia, Uruguay, but let's make the safe assumption that Uruguay gets a win in that game, Ed. So then at that point, pretty much the scenarios would be, if the USA were to lose, Panama would just need any result against Bolivia, and then the US would be out of the group. With goal difference now, I feel like if they're both, I'd have to do some math here. The only way to ensure that the U.S. gets out of the group is to beat Uruguay. That is going to be very, very difficult. Also, because Panama and the U.S. both have 3 points, Uruguay has to go for a result, because there's a possibility if the U.S. beats Uruguay and then Panama beats Bolivia, then Uruguay could finish third on the various tiebreakers and everything. So this isn't like the they can sit back because the U.S. drew Panama and Uruguay knows that they've already advanced, like what England did in their final group stage game, having already qualified. And if the USA were to draw, then they would go to a tiebreaker with Panama if they were to draw with Bolivia. And I don't think that would favor, well, that no, that would favor the U.S. because they'd have the superior goal difference because they're up 2-0, assuming that because Bolivia-Panama wouldn't affect the goal difference. So in any case, listeners, Bolivia would need to get a result against Panama, and that would help out the U.S. if the U.S. were to get a draw, and the only way to guarantee it is that the U.S. wins. And if U.S. loses to Uruguay, then Panama needs any result, and the U.S. is probably out. Uruguay is the best team in this group. Uruguay may very well, with how much, you know, Brazil's struggling and how much Argentina is Messi dependent, Uruguay might on paper be the best or at least the most balanced team in this competition. You're topping that off by the fact that Tim Weah's unavailable, so we'll see what Greg Berhalter does positionally on that. This is going to be a very difficult game. I will be shocked if Ed and I are talking to you Monday night, Tuesday, about the USA beating Uruguay, and in all likelihood, it's not likely the U.S. gets out of the group at this point. And for me, the most likely scenario is somehow Bolivia gets something off of Panama and the U.S. goes, you know, squeaky bum time and somehow gets a 0-0 or a 1-1 against Uruguay. And am I being too pessimistic? And who are you putting in Tim Weah's position on Monday?
No, I don't think you're being too pessimistic. I think you're being realistic. And I think, you know, the optimist in me was thinking, well, you know, if Uruguay pumps Bolivia like we think they will, then maybe they'll rotate the squad and maybe not necessarily go for it in a way that they would if the group wasn't already locked up. Because I believe now if they win tonight in any fashion, they essentially lock up top of the group. So if maybe, you know, that's just me trying to think of any way that Uruguay might not go full force against us and we might have a chance to leak a win. As far as replacing Tim Weah, I feel like the more natural replacement would be Haji Wright, and play him out on the wing. I believe he's played out on the wing a little bit for Coventry. You know, Josh Sargent is another option. He's been used as a winger before, but in all honesty, I would change the formation and play with a two striker system and have Pulisic and Balogun up top. Pulisic can drop in if need be, and then have a maybe like a diamond midfield with Johnny, Wes, Musa, and Reyna. But, you know, I don't think Greg will adapt the tactics at all. I think it'll just be a like-for-like swap with Haji Wright.
I'd like to see Reyna closer up to goal, Ed, especially if I'd want flexibility and fresh legs in the midfield. And you'd want a good defensive work rate and mobility from the midfield. And not saying that Gio couldn't do that, because I do believe athletically he would, but then that work rate from the midfield three would then allow for more freedom and energy conservation and freeform jazz from the front three. And if I'm just thinking, let's optimize for what gets our front three attackers in the best position to create as much as possible in transition or in possession. That's Gio Reyna on the right, Christian Pulisic on the left, and Florian Balogun up top for me. Unless we're going, I guess if you want to do Haji right and then play for set pieces and go for his forehead or back heels like against the Netherlands in the World Cup, then I think there's a possible argument for that. I'm disagreeing with it, like many things that I feel about Greg Berhalter at this point. So I would do Gio Reyna up top, and then I mean you could mix and match. I'd want Yunus Musa in there. You have to have McKennie in there, obviously. And then I'd have another situation where either it's somebody in for Adams and Adams subs on at halftime, or vice versa. I'd be fine with Johnny Cardoso. I'd be fine with Brandon Aaronson. I wouldn't want I'd want somebody who is press resistant, which makes me hesitant to say Luca De La Torre. But any combination of those ones as well, I think are viable options in any mixed matching that, of course, includes Weston McKennie for me and Tim Adams and Tyler Adams at some point for 45 minutes. I mean, he played it. I mean, he looked better in this game than he did previously. You know, the three games that he's gotten, if we're going back to the friendlies before the competition started, Ed, he's looked better. So I almost think do you think, Tyler, we're subbing you off for Johnny? We need you to run. We need you to do good stuff on the ball. We need you to be press resistant. Go till you can't go no more. Tell us when that is. If it's halftime, fine. If it's the 65th minute, fine. If you're feeling great in the 85th minute, fine. But that sub is there and that's available for you. Because then I would think that would free up Tyler Adams to do a lot of the really good stuff that he's done against Mexico, certainly in the Iran game as well. I thought he was good against the Netherlands if we're bringing back past performances. So there's that. And I did look this up. So there is a bit of a nuance here with tiebreakers for the Copa America group stage. Most important criteria for the results of the teams. Okay, so that's points. So then the first tiebreaker is goal difference. And then it's the if it is the same between the two teams, the one who has scored the most goals would advance. So it's it's goal difference, then goals scored. Then after that, it is points obtained in a match involving both teams. So so the U.S. is up, has a plus one goal difference. Panama is still negative. And then if we're doing goals scored as well, the U.S. is up on that as well. So unless there's something crazy in terms of the teams going to draws and it being a really weird scoreline, the U.S. does have the advantage from a goal difference standpoint. Granted, you're going into that game under the assumption or the hope that Bolivia gets a result. And as we do not need to bring about from a certain game in Trinidad and Tobago, Ed, you do not play for a draw, assuming that the other scorelines are also going to hold. So I think you have to go out and try and win Uruguay. And if that brings a mentality and brings an effort to where then the U.S. earns a draw and then gets some luck, karma, the soccer gods then reward them by having Bolivia draw them, then I think somewhere in there in my in my soccer karma, I will see that as validated, Ed. But the simplest way is to go for a win. I don't know how they do it. I've described how I think they would. We're talking, you're going to need the best performance, I think, from the U.S. under Greg Berhalter since and including the World Cup at this point, I think, in order to get the result. If the U.S. does to Uruguay on Monday what they did against England, who are boring and a very good defensive team and make life difficult, whereas I think Uruguay can be had, albeit they're more threatening attacking wise without having Harry Kane, then I think if they put in that performance like they did against England in Qatar, then I think that would be good enough for them to get a result. I think anything less than that, it's not good enough. And if they make some simple mistakes like they did tonight, then they're put in a position to fail, or they're put in a position where I do not think they'll get a result. Ed, what did we make of Ethan Horvath, and are we, you know, if he were to start, how would we feel about that as opposed to an injured Matt Turner?
I thought he was okay. I thought he had some nervy moments. There was one where he kind of came out to be a sweeper and it was a little weird. Mm. He kind of touched it forward and I don't think Scally was necessarily ready for it. So it's not all his fault there.
Yeah, and then Scally punts it, I think, out for a throw-in. Yeah. So.
Yeah. It's just kind of a weird moment. But, you know, he hasn't played for us in a long time. He's just been – that's a tough ask for a goalie to come in at halftime in a game like that, in a situation like that. So I don't really hold this 45 minutes to a very high standard one way or the other. I would be okay with him in goal if it came to that. Obviously, I would prefer Matt Turner, but I'm not going to be shaking in my boots because of Ethan Horvath. I'll be shaking in my boots because we're playing Uruguay, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't think we will lose because of him, is what I'm trying to say. If we lose, it will not be Ethan Horvath's fault, most likely.
Yeah. I would say that I don't blame him primarily for the goal. I think there's other people at fault. But, you know, the fact that the ball's right there and, you know, it was like within his reach as well, that I thought maybe he could have done better on it. I've been thinking it, so I'll say it now. I think a fully healthy and engaged Matt Turner probably makes that save, and then maybe we're having a different conversation. But to your point, I'm not blaming him in the same way that I'm not mad that Ricardo Pepi missed that header that he had. That's not who I'm primarily placing fault at. Anything else we want to Ed, let's do predictions. I won't do score lines or anything. Just 11:30 p.m. Eastern on Monday, has the United States advanced to the knockout rounds of the 2024 Copa America? Yes or no?
No.
I agree. No. Do you want to give a prediction on how it happens? I do not think the U.S. beats Uruguay. I think Uruguay beats Bolivia.
No.
You know, we're recording this right now. You'll know the result of that scoreline. Can you imagine it if, like, Bolivia wins that game and, like, all of this just becomes suddenly obsolete? That would be so CONCACAF-y.
I'm a huge Bolivia fan right now.
big Bolivia fans here, Ed. I've been, you know, a diehard ever since I was born, you know, 2 hours ago. I think Uruguay beats Bolivia, you know, at time of recording. I think Panama gets any result against Bolivia, and I think the U.S., I think the U.S. at most will get a draw. I think Panama gets at least a draw against Bolivia. I think the U.S. gets no more than a draw against Uruguay. Well, I did just say the tiebreakers. Panama beats Bolivia.
Yeah.
And then is there a scenario? Would that then initiate the other tiebreakers, Ed? So then if both teams win, we'd go back to then what's the goal difference and then what's the total number of goal scores, which right
like
now.
Like if Panama and USA win?
Yeah, so the U.S. has an advantage there, but the issue is that if Panama, like, blows out Bolivia 3-0, then that overcomes the goal difference, where I don't see the U.S. getting a multi-goal victory against Uruguay. So I think Panama beats Bolivia, and I don't think the U.S. beats Uruguay. And so whatever happens in terms of the tiebreakers, goal difference, goal scored, blah, 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 the U.S. finishes third in the group. Okay.
I agree.
Ed, any last words? Should we get out of here?
Just that I'm not trying to use this time to slander Ricardo Pepi, because I do feel for the kid. You know, he's had some extremely good opportunities to score for us, but I'm sure he's probably injured, and the injury is, and he came on tonight, but I just can't help but wonder what could have been if maybe Josh Sargent was the one who got those minutes over Ricardo Pepi, or which hindsight is 2020, you know, but if Josh Sargent is fit, I'm a big believer in his, and I think he would better suit those kind of opportunities that were given to Pepi, but that's just my two cents on that.
Okay. Well, listeners, you can check out all of our content at lastwordonsports.com/football. I've been doing lineup predictions. I'm going to have fun trying to predict what Greg Berhalter's thinking on for Monday, and then Ed's been doing some other content. Obviously, that's where you're getting the podcast here. So search at LWS Radio or Last Word on Sports on your podcatcher of choice. You'll find us and a bunch of other great content as well. And follow us on all the socials at Last Word FC, at Last Word SC. I want to thank our sponsor, Athletic Greens. Their signature AG1 formula is perfect for daily nutrition and gut health support. AG1 solves two of the most important health needs: the nutrition that you need for each day and building a foundation of long-term gut health. Together, they help fuel your whole body health and can impact everything from your sleep to digestion, energy, mood, immunity, and even the health of your hair, skin, and nails. Simply follow the link in the show description to get started with Athletic Greens today. Listeners, we'll be back after Monday, regardless of what ends up happening. And as long as the United States is in the group, we're going to be podcasting. We're going to be putting out written content. And hopefully that extends past Monday and Tuesday of next week. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Last Word Soccer Club Radio. We hope it was therapeutic. We hope it was informative. And we'll see you after, you know, a rousing 3-0 victory by the United States on Monday.
Yeah.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.